Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
And welcome to Black Hole Cinema. We're back again for our monthly roundup, where we take a look back at the films that were released in the last month. Obviously, you'll listen to this at the end of March, so we'll be taking a look at all the main releases during the month of March. I'm Dan Taylor, and joining me this week is Chris Haig. Hello, Chris.
Hi.
Hello. You've seen a number of films this month. For you, would you say it's been a good month? Have you been enticed out to the cinema this month?
Weirdly, yeah, more than I have been in previous months, because there are entire months that will go by and I'm like, well, there's nothing on, or it's crap, or that sort of thing. I don't know if it's been a good month necessarily. I'll say it's been a big month. I mean, some of the films we're going to talk about are quite anticipated one way or another. So I think it's been quite a big calendar month, because it's really kind of March, April when they start kicking off all the big kind of blockbusters.
Absolutely. And in part two, we'll also be joined by Tony Black, and we'll be discussing 10 Cloverfield Lane, The Witch, High Rise, and of course the juggernaut that is Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice. But in the first part, we'll be discussing London Has Fallen, Allegiant, and up first, Hail Caesar.
Bless me, Father, for I have sinned.
How long since your last confession, my son?
27 hours.
It's really too often. You're not that bad.
Here at Capitol Pictures, as you know, millions of people look to us for information and uplift and, yes, entertainment. And we're going to give it to them.
And action.
An army of technicians and actors and top-notch artistic people are working hard to bring to the screen our biggest release of the year. Hail Caesar is a prestige picture with one of the biggest stars in the world, Baird Whitlock.
A truth we could see if we had, but if we faith, cut!
Hail Caesar follows a day in the life of Eddie Mannix, a Hollywood fixer for Capitol Pictures in the 1950s, who cleans up and solves problems for big names and stars in the industry. But when studio star Whitlock disappears, Mannix has to deal with more than just the fix. It's a Coen Brothers movie. It's got a massive cast, even if some do more than others. Josh Brolin, obviously, plays the main role of Eddie Mannix. You've also got the likes of Scarlett Johansson and George Clooney. It's a big cast, but for me, there were a lot of people that didn't get an awful lot to do. And the main one is Jonah Hill. He was in, what, one scene? The whole film? Maybe two?
Yeah, I think he was in at the middle, and then I think he had a bit at the end,
yeah. And that was Tilda Swinton, she was very good, but again, it's all kind of very fleeting kind of appearances. Channing Tatum had a big musical number, and then obviously was kind of in the conclusion of the film, as it were. But was it necessary to have all these big names in it, or you know, could you have had kind of nameless faces, as it were, playing these roles, do you think? Or do you think the actual familiarity of these actors were important?
I mean, in terms of the structure of the film and everything, I think I get what they were going for, because what they're trying to do is emulate kind of the big studio feel of like the 1940s and the 1950s, kind of post Hays Code, that sort of thing. And it was really interesting to see how they were like, oh, okay, so we're just going to take like a little snapshot of each kind of like stereotypical film. So you had Scarlett Johansson there, you know, as like a mermaid in one film. You had Channing Tatum as like a dancing sailor in another. You had this, you had that, that sort of thing. In terms of the big name stars actually being a hindrance or a help, I don't know. I mean, I think this is probably the biggest in terms of the Coen brothers, like one of the biggest ones they've done in terms of the big, like, draw names.
Mm.
I think maybe since Burn After Reading, which had quite a few, like, there was Brad Pitt in it, and it was Frances McDormand and all that sort of thing. I personally didn't mind it. I didn't think it really distracted away from the film, because the whole film was this kind of glossy, shiny veneer of, oh, this is what we think Hollywood's like, and this is what it was like back then, and everything was kind of hyped, not exactly hyped up, but kind of caricatured and really kind of laid on a bit. So I personally think it added to the film. I do like in some of them. I mean, like you said, Jonah Hill didn't really get much to do. Tilda Swinton has a kind of semi-significant role in it as two kind of warring gossip mongers. But I don't mind the fact that they were used kind of sparingly. Necessarily. I mean, if it had been a different kind of film, if it had been something where you could tell they were like, right, well, we need to put a big name in this, just stick. You know, yeah. It's a bit like the whole 12 Years of Slave thing where they stuck Brad Pitt in, and Brad Pitt was all over the posters in international countries, and you're just like, he's in, like, 5-10 minutes of the film. He's not he's not the big draw here. So, I mean, the film really is kind of, it centres on, like, Josh Brolin, it centres on George Clooney, and all these kind of Hollywood bigwigs. So I personally enjoyed the fact that they were like, right, well, we're going to bring you in. There'll be a few weeks of filming, and it'll kind of be not exactly a parable, but kind of like it'll sync the ideas up that, oh, yeah, so this is a big Hollywood name playing a fictional big Hollywood name, that sort of thing.
There have been two camps with this film. There have been people that have loved it and, you know, think it's one of the strongest Coen brother films in quite a while, and there's the other camp that I think the only way I'm trying to explain it is they didn't get it. It felt like that they didn't quite get. You know, I was listening to Mayo and Commode, and they had someone write in that said, "Oh, I chuckled a bit, but other than that," and I was like, "Well, that's kind of the point." You know, it's a feel good movie. It's not deep at all. You know, it's very light. And very funny, and it's kind of very typical Coen brother, I think, film. You know, it's a bit like Burn After Reading in that way, in the fact that you've got this humour, even with it's quite ridiculous. He is effectively kidnapped, but they make a complete joke out of that kind of thing. And neither of these people, or none of these people, are very threatening. It's all satire. And I don't know if people went in thinking it was a different movie, maybe. Maybe they were expecting something different and they didn't get what they went in for.
No, exactly. I think people went in expecting something, oh, it's going to be like maybe a bit grittier or that sort of thing. But if you actually look at the trailers, you actually look at the way it's promoted, it's basically like a farce or a screwball comedy or something like that. I really appreciate it, because I'm someone who loves the screwball comedies like the 30s and the 40s and all that sort of thing. So I enjoyed the fact that this was kind of like a modern view on it, and in the 50s and that. So I get why people might have been a bit polarised by it. I mean, I haven't seen too many Coen Brothers films. I'm really bad, so the other one that I've seen with regularity, which I do really enjoy, is Fargo. I adore Fargo dearly. But I've also seen like a bit of Burn After Reading and all that sort of thing, so there will be kind of diehard Coen Brothers fans who are, well, this doesn't, you know, in terms of their oeuvre, in terms of like their kind of previous history. It's not that good, it's not that significant, that sort of thing.
I think it's worth, the whole experience was worth it for the scene between Ralph Fiennes' character I think it's Alden Enterright or something, he plays Hobie Doyle, and obviously he's this actor that, you know, he doesn't really ever speak in his films, he just goes around and he does his tricks, and this is a bit like nowadays, you know, us casting a stuntman in highbrow drama. And that's kind of the idea of what they did this. They've taken this guy out of, who is very popular in the genre he's in, but plonking him in a genre that doesn't fit. And then you have this scene between Hobie Doyle and the director, Lawrence Lorentz, or however they decided they wanted to pronounce it. You just get this funny interaction between them where you've got this director who is trying his damnedest to make it work in the parameters of what he's been told to do by the studio, but it's almost impossible because this guy just can't act.
All right, let's try this. Your line, just say it as I say it. Say your line exactly as I'm about to.
Okay, sure.
Would that it were so simple.
Would that it were so simple.
Would that it were so simple.
Would that it were...
Wait, watch my mouth. Would that it were so simple.
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 My dear boy, why do you say that? Why do you say twer?
Well, you said say it like I say it.
Yes,
but... Would that it were so simple.
No, you seem to be lingering. It's interminable, the were. I'm wondering when it'll end. Then we shouldn't be wondering, should we? We should be marching right along to so simple. Would that it were so simple. Trippingly.
Oh, yeah. I love that scene, but the problem is it got spoiled. It was in one of the trailers, was this... And it cut, like, the 2 minutes of it, and I'm there just like, this is actually really funny, because it's a bit like casting Jason Statham in, like, Room or somewhere. You're there just like, it doesn't work. Jason Statham works in his kind of films, and, Brie Larson and all that sort of thing, they were great in Room and all that sort of thing. But it's just, I love it as a comedy, because it doesn't take itself too seriously. There's no big, deep messages or anything. There's no kind of, oh, we're trying to say this about humanity, or we're trying to say this or that sort of thing. It's basically like you said, it's satire. I don't know if I'd quite say parody, but in a way it's almost like a love letter, really, to the studio films of the 1950s before all the transition in the 1960s, when they became a bit more kind of edgy and less PC and all that sort of thing. Because they were very sanitised in the 1950s, so it is really funny to see the facade of these films, where everyone's singing and dancing and, oh, you know, you can do this and all that sort of thing. And then you come off the set and you realise that nothing's changed in the last 60 years. There's still, there's still scandal and drama and all that sort of thing. And it makes it just an enjoyable film. I don't know if I'd watch it, like, back to back and all that sort of thing. And I don't know if I'd really recommend it to someone who's like, I really enjoyed, like, Barton Fink, or I really enjoyed Three Kings or that sort of thing. But if you want to go into it as like a fun, frothy, kind of effervescent film and just kind of leave your, not exactly your cynicism, because it is cynical in parts, but if you kind of want to just enjoy a film about films that doesn't take itself too seriously, then yeah, I recommend this. I had a lot of fun watching this, more than I thought I was going to.
And Josh Brolin, I thought, was great in it as well. It doesn't get the opportunity very often to be front and centre in films these days. You know, he has done, but it's been a while since he's been front and centre, very much carried a film, which is what he did here. And, you know, even though it's, you know, very light and fluffy, as we said, there is kind of this undercurrent running on it, where you've got this man where he's got this dilemma. Does he do what he's got to do as a man to provide for his family? Does he go off and get this high profile expensive job working in the aviation industry, or does he go with his heart and, you know, stay within the film industry, which he clearly loves? He loves his job as a fixer, and, you know, and for lots of people, you couldn't think of anything worse than having divas and egotistical assholes walking into your office every 5 minutes going, I can't do this, I can't do that. But for him, he gets this thrill from it, and he enjoys the fact that actually, at the end of the day, he has this product that comes out of it. All the work he has to do, even though it's all behind the scenes, there ends up being this film at the end of it, which for him makes all the kind of stress that he has to go through. And even though he's not getting the plaudits like the actors do or the directors, he himself knows that in part he was responsible for getting that film into theatres.
I think you're right in saying Josh Brolin kind of needs to be front and center more. I mean, I think it wasn't the last one he was like the leader, wasn't it? That god awful Old Boy remake. It might be. I don't know. I don't really follow
him. Yeah, he's quite often in partnerships. You know, he's one of, you know, a group of, kind of a two or three, like, you know, in recent, it's been kind of stuff like Sicario, and Inherent Vice, where he's part of a good ensemble of two or three actors. And I guess to an extent that's what he is still doing here. You know, he's got George Clooney and, you know, all the actors that don't get a lot to do that we've mentioned. But, you know, it is kind of those two that kind of lead the film, but they're not leading it together. They're almost, I don't think they have, what, one scene together, maybe, throughout the whole film? Their stories are two completely different arcs, even though obviously they're linked through the fact that obviously it's Brolin's character's job to make sure that the actor is where he's supposed to be. But obviously George Clooney's character, Whitlock, goes off and has this whole little adventure where he's obviously kidnapped and etc. And, you know, I don't want to spoil, the actual contents of what happens in those meetings, shall we say, with his character, because he has his own little arc kind of going on. But they both do very well at leading their kind of arcs of the story. And as I said, I think you should do it a lot more. Overall, though, is it one you would recommend?
I would recommend it to people who, and this is going to sound really weird, but I would recommend it to people who don't know a lot about Coen Brothers films, because I think the ones who have seen every film or a big kind of, you know, aficionados of their body of work, it will be polarising and it will be people going, oh, well, I loved it. Well, I thought it was crap and lightweight and all that sort of thing. But like I said, if you want something fun, if you want something frothy, if you want something entertaining, then it is good on those respects. And it's funny. It's a funny film. And it does it better than a lot of the more traditional, and I say traditional in like inverted quotes here, traditional comedies that are getting released.
Yeah. I'm sure for most of our regular listeners, I know that many of those that have watched it, I'm sure, will agree. You know, we run a poll, as it were, behind the scenes as to find out, you know, what was the most popular film in March. And for me, unsurprisingly, this kind of was very high up, if not, I think it's top even. So, you know, Black Hole Cinema faithful, give it a thumbs up. So, you know, it is still in theatres. Even though it's obviously being drowned out by the noise being made by two certain superheroes. But it's well worth a watch, so make sure you check it out.
Mr. Mannix.
What's up?
The director can't find Baird Whitlock.
Somebody slipped it under my door.
We have your movie star. Gather $100,000 and await instructions. Who are we? The future. Hello, Bert.
Hello, Mr. Mannix.
Lawrence, Obi, thank you all for coming. The studio needs your help. Baird Whitlock has been kidnapped.
This is bad. Bad for movie stars everywhere.
She sings the perfect harmony.
Let's spend 24 hours. But we're looking for him. We don't want it in the gossip columns.
This is going to cost the studio a lot of money.
And that's where you come in. I need some cash.
You must have very strong forearms. Is it hard squeezing it like that?
It's part of the job, miss.
And up next, we've got the review of Allegiant.
People think walls separate us. But they also protect us.
You know, it's going to be hard getting over the wall.
Are you sure that you want to do this?
Go, 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 go!
Those people out there kept us in a cage for 200 years. That is not someone I want to engage with.
Nothing to worry about. You're safe now.
So, Dan, what did you think of Allegiant? Great.
After the earth-shattering revelations of Insurgent, Triss must escape with Thor and go beyond the wall enclosing Chicago. For the first time ever, they will leave the only city they and their family have ever known. Once outside, old discoveries are quickly rendered meaningless with the revelation of shocking new truths. Triss and Thor must quickly decide who they can trust as a ruthless battle ignites beyond the walls of Chicago, which threatens all of humanity. In order to survive, Triss will be forced to make impossible choices about courage, allegiance, sacrifice, and love. For those of you that listened to my review of Insurgent last year, will kind of know my general opinions on the Divergent series as a whole. And it's something that I know a lot of people that I've talked about kind of agree with, that at its core, it's a very good idea. And from what I've heard, the books are very good. And for me, it could have been a very successful series, but in the kind of parameters of a film, it doesn't quite work. It's also been released at a time where we were almost oversaturated with kind of this kind of teen film, because you've got The Hunger Games, we've had Harry Potter, we've got Maze Runner, all these films kind of all being released kind of within 10 years of each other. So it's only fair, really, that you compare and contrast these different franchises, and it's inevitable, you do. And I kind of had the opinion, I think Tony and I both said it last year, it's a poor man's Hunger Games. You've got Shailene Woodley, who's very good in her own right, but she's not Jennifer Lawrence. You've got a Theo James, who unfortunately lacks the charisma his counterparts in Josh Hutcherson primarily offer and bring to the screen. He's very bland, and there are a lot of good people in this, and Allegiance no different. Jeff Daniels is introduced to the cast in this one, but you've also obviously got Miles Teller and Naomi Watts among them as well, all of whom are great actors and have done a load of great work, and they're almost wasted here. You've got Octavia Spencer as well, who's in this, who has about two or three scenes throughout the whole film, and was very much the same in Insurgent as well. You've got these big name actors who should elevate this film, should elevate this series, but unfortunately doesn't. They're kind of wasted, and because of that, it almost renders their performances, you know, meaningless. And what unfortunately happens is, as I said, we talked about last year, you've got good ideas here. You have the idea of there being these different factions that kind of run society, and basically everybody has strengths and weaknesses within those. At its core, that's primarily a good idea, but unfortunately it doesn't quite work, because we don't get to explore this world enough before everything kind of falls apart. Within the first film, everything kind of goes to shit, and the second film it gets worse, and in this third film it gets worse again, and we're introduced to even more of this universe without even really getting to know it. And the characters themselves, you don't root for them, unfortunately. I mentioned him already, Theo James, he lacks the charisma to bring any kind of empathy with Ford. You know, you don't really care. He's just kind of this muscle on legs that runs around shooting and punching and hitting everybody that's in his path. And you just think, I don't get it. I don't get it. And you don't understand the love affair between Thor and Triss. There's no chemistry between the actors, and so unfortunately you just don't care what happens to them. This film itself, I think for me, probably was an improvement, simply because it seemed a lot more self-contained. There seemed to be some really good points, particularly between Jeff Daniels and Shailene Woodley's character. Basically, Jeff Daniels plays a chap named David, who is the director, effectively, of the outside world, because the world of the first two films took place inside the walls of a post-apocalyptic Chicago, and basically Triss, Thor, etc. have now gone outside this wall and met David and the society that kind of exists outside. And as you would expect, David isn't who he says he is, or at least doesn't do what he says he's trying to do. And it's all about Triss's path to achieving a better world and wanting a better life for herself and for those around her. And she wants to trust these people. She really does, because she wants so badly for them to escape the kind of hell that they've gone through in recent years with Kate Winslet's character, who I can't remember in the previous films, and the kind of society that was unfortunately flawed and didn't work. And so she really wants to work towards a better world, and she believes this man and this bureau, as they call themselves, can achieve that. And unfortunately it doesn't quite work. And as I said, particularly the scenes between those two are really interesting, because they probably are the strongest players in the whole thing. What lets it down, obviously, is the action scenes. The CGI is horrendous. you know, there's lots of lens flares and all sorts of kind of special effects going on that just look cheap. And I think it was touted before that if this been a TV series or a Netflix TV series, it would probably be even better. It might have worked. You'd have had time to have gotten to know these characters and wanted to back them and root for them. But unfortunately, because we didn't get that time, because we didn't get...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
To know these heroes that we're supposed to root for, it all just feels a little bit pointless. And the fact that it's also done so badly at the box office this month, and the fact that they've cut the budget for the final film, suggests that it's not going to get a decent resolution either. And having come off the back of watching Mockingjay Part 2 last year and that not quite living up to the expectation that many people had for it, the worry is that this final film is going to be, you know, a complete waste of people's time, and even worse, a waste of people's money. However, I stand by the fact that if it had taken on a different medium, it probably would have worked a lot better. However, in its current form, it didn't work. It doesn't work. And if I don't have to, I won't be going to see the next one.
This isn't us against us. This is us against the people on the other side of that wall. They're trying to destroy us.
Where are you going?
We're saving the city.
Shoot her down.
Before we move on to the final film of part one, we're going to be taking a little sidestep and looking at the box office top 10. I actually have two lists. The first list will be looking at February's month top 10 here in the UK, because I thought it was important to take a look back, as it were. If we'd had the figures for March, I'd be telling you that as well, but we don't. So the February top 10. There's a few in there actually that I'm not familiar with and or haven't seen. At number 10 was A Big Splash, which I don't know of. Don't know if you do, Chris. A bigger splash. No, I don't know that one.
No.
Number 9 is The Forest, which I believe was that horror film with the actress from
Natalie
Dormer. That's the one. And that one only took just under $1.5 million, so not much at all. Number 8 was Triple Nine, which was that kind of heist film, had a really interesting cast. It was Anthony Mackie, the chap from Aaron Paul, that was the one I think.
Yeah.
The chap from Breaking Bad is what I was going to say, and then I remember his name. Aaron Paul. Kate Winslet, I think, was in that one as well. It's an interesting cast, but obviously didn't hit. the audience's imagination, because it only took just over $2 million here in the UK. Number seven, while it jumps up to over $5.5 million, it was considered a flop at the time, and apparently not a very good film either, which was Zoolander 2. Obviously, Ben Stiller's attempt at trying to remind people that he's funny. Number six was a Sony release that really didn't go down very well, and that was The Brothers Grimsby. Did you see that one?
No, I'm not. I really was thinking, oh, I might go see it, that sort of thing. But it just, it looked kind of unfunny. Yeah. And I was just like, okay. Because when Sacha Baron Cohen is good, he's really good. But it's just a shame that kind of he's been making more kind of character pieces, which are great. But he kind of just goes, right, I love this really funny character, do research, like he does, blah, blah, blah. And then he'll just forget about the film actually needs a plot. And it needs jokes. He can't just do, right, well, he's from Grimsby, so he'll talk northern like that, and he'll do this, and he'll do a parody, and, you know, that sort of thing. Which is fine, but it doesn't make a funny film.
Number five was How to Be Single, which was just Rebel Wilson and co. I guess maybe I should be able to relate to How to Be Single, but, you know, it wasn't really my alley. I know it was very popular, obviously, with the female contingent. Took $8.5 million here in the UK. So didn't do too badly at all, but was Warner Brothers' only film in the top 10 for February. Number four, I actually thought this would be a little bit higher, and that was Dad's Army.
Aww.
It took $12 million.
Not bad.
Yeah, I thought it was one of the kind of tentpole releases of February, and considering the fact that it was released the earliest out of anything else on the list, I expected it to be higher, but it did well for itself, and the top three, I'm sure the number one release is no surprise, but number three was Goosebumps, which was obviously the Jack Black adaptation of the was it a TV series and a book series?
I don't know. I'm not. It was definitely a book series. I can't remember if it was a TV show.
Yeah,
there used to be a kids' TV show, and it used to be really scary.
Yeah,
I can't remember what the hell the name of it is, but. Yeah, apparently it was a TV show.
Yeah, thought it was.
It might have been Goosebumps that I watched.
Yeah. That took $12.5 million, and not too bad at all. Number two, anyone that listened to the last podcast knows how just disgraced I am that this film took as much money as it has. It took nearly $23 million here in the UK, and that's Alvin and the Chipmunks: The Road Trip.
Oh, God.
Which definitely means there'll be a number five installment of the franchise. I know they're easy films to make, aren't they? I think that's the point here. And I think kids do enjoy them. It's just, unfortunately, I just thought we'd gotten to a point now where they were releasing films that adults wouldn't mind going to see as well. You know, obviously Disney and Pixar are very good at releasing films that actually adults almost take more enjoyment from than children. You know, Inside Out,
yeah.
Good Dinosaur, etc. You know, in recent years, and you know, even Frozen, as much as it now irritates everybody on the planet, at the time, everyone almost universally enjoyed. But and then Alvin and the Chipmunks comes back out of the woodwork and reminds you that no, there are still people making really, really simplistic films. But never mind. Number one, as I said, probably wasn't any surprise to anybody if you listen to my top 10 last time out, then it actually came number three, I think, out of everything that was released between October and February. And that, so this number one is Deadpool. Took $53 million, which is a ridiculous amount of money. Did you get a chance to catch Deadpool, Chris?
I have just seen it in the past few days.
Yeah.
And I enjoy it. I get why people like it, and it is very funny and all that sort of thing. Yeah. I don't know if I'd buy it for home release.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd buy it as a streaming thing. But in the cinema, yeah, it was funny. I met my friends. There was like quite a lot of jokes. Ryan Reynolds is. He's probably, this is not me besmirching Ryan Reynolds, I think it's the role he was kind of born to play.
Yeah.
Because it fits his, like, I've seen him on talk shows and everything, and he is one of those people who does have that kind of, that sense of humour, and that kind of wit and charm and all that sort of thing. And it's really nice, to be honest, to see him in a film that kind of does service to it, because he doesn't really get like lead roles a lot. Usually it's part of the lead ensemble, that sort of thing. And the last time was Green Lantern, Let Us Never Speak of It Again.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it, and literally everyone at work who's been like, oh, I saw Deadpool, what was it like? Oh, it was really good. Oh, that sort of thing. So it seems to have quite a... It's strange for a film that was stuck in development hell for a few years, and, you know, execs must have thought, oh, it's quite niche, it's quite weird, all that sort of thing. It's become the kind of the dark horse darling of the comic book world.
Yeah.
And it's kind of an antithesis to stuff like, you know, like Age of Ultron, all that sort of thing, where it's a big, 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 overblown epic. And this is basically him and the very talented, what is her name? I want to call her Vanessa, but that's the character's name. It's Marina Baccarin. And she's great in it. She's really funny in it, which is kind of refreshing, really, because love interests, a lot of them in Marvel movies are there just to be, like, pretty and a bit spunky and all that sort of thing. But she's actually, like, funny. She gets, like, a good percentage of the jokes herself, which is refreshing, and it is enjoyable. So, yeah, I would, you know, recommend people go see Deadpool, that sort of thing. It's a good film.
So that's the top 10 for February, and the weekend results from the weekend just gone, so the end of March, which was the 25th and 26th and 27th, I think, what day, I can't even remember what day of the week it is today. That's what bank holidays do to you. So all I can bring you is the results from last weekend. So that was the weekend, the 18th to the 20th of March. That's the most up-to-date figures that have currently been released by the BFI. At number 10, one I've not even heard of at all, and that's Kapoor and Sons. It was distributed by 21st Century Fox and took just under £200,000. At number 9, was in the released in February, which was Grimsby, just over £200,000. Number 8, we reviewed it at the start of the show, and that's Hail Caesar. That one brought in just under £400,000 that weekend. Number 7, we just chatted about it, and that was Deadpool, still bringing in money, brought in just under, or just over rather, £500,000 last weekend. Number 6, we'll be reviewing in part 2, and that's High Rise, and that one took £542,000, Studio Canal release. Number 5 is The Boy. That one took £726,000, an Entertainment Pictures release. Number 4, we've already reviewed it, the Divergent series, Legion. That one took £771,000. Number 3 will be the film that we'll be reviewing next, and that's London Has Fallen. That took just over £1 million. Another review for part 2, and that's 10 Cloverfield Lane. That's at number 2. That took just over £1.5 million last weekend. And at number 1 is Kung Fu Panda 3, which took £1,740,695. Before we close out part 1, we better review Gerald Butler's latest outing in London Has Fallen.
Hell of a presidential race, sir.
Every day the same damn joke. What the hell they make you out of?
Bourbon and poor choices.
With security at unprecedented levels, this isn't just a gathering of the world's most powerful leaders. It is the most protected event on Earth.
Welcome to London, Mr. President.
What's wrong?
Nothing.
Bugs the hell out of me.
Get down!
An attack has decimated the British capital.
After the British Prime Minister has passed away under mysterious circumstances, all leaders of the Western world must attend his funeral. But what started out as the most protected event on Earth turns into a deadly plot to kill the world's most powerful leaders and unleash a terrifying vision of the future. The President of the United States, his formidable Secret Service head and British MI6 agent, who trust no one, are the only people to have any hope of stopping it. Dun dun dun. So for anybody that saw Olympus Has Fallen, which was the first in the franchise, we'll really know what to expect. And that's just guns and explosions and Gerald Butler running around like a headless chicken, killing everybody in his path. Meanwhile, he has the President of the United States, played by Aaron Eckhart, in tow. And Morgan Freeman pops up every now and then as... I didn't think it was the Vice President in the first film, but he does seem to be the Vice President in this film. In the first film, he was like Speaker of the House or something. So he's obviously been promoted to VP in this film. I might be wrong. I'm sure I'll be corrected. For me, I watched this after watching Hail Caesar. So two completely different films. And it was exactly what I expected it to be. No frills, no serious plot, even though obviously trying to kill all the world leaders is pretty serious. But other than that, it was exactly what I expected it to be, which was just mindless fun. And I came out of it and I did enjoy it. I know people have absolutely shat on this film. And I think it's got like a 28 out of 100 on Metascore. And IMDb, it's performed awfully, but the fact that it still took over $1 million pounds in, I think it was its second or third weekend of release, means that people do want to see this kind of film. And it is simple, and it is just kind of a release from what is actually going on in the world. And for that reason, I think it has a place. What did you think? Did you enjoy it?
I didn't mind it. I mean, like, I've seen Olympus Has Fallen on Netflix, and, you know, I get the whole thing with Gerard Butler and, you know, Morgan Freeman and Aaron Eckhart and all that sort of thing. It's weird because this, to me, is kind of like a perfect example of the great 80s movie revival. So, like, my dad and brother will happily sit through kind of shit-tastic films, a bit like Delta Force with Chuck Norris and all that sort of thing. And it reminded me of this in the... It is literally, it's not even high octane, it's literally action, 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 a tiny bit of character, not even development, but it's more just so they can't say it was a, you know, 100-minute punch fest or explosion fest, that sort of thing. I don't mind it. I do enjoy action movies, I do enjoy high octane films, so I didn't love this, but I'm really trying to find the best way to say it. I wouldn't mind not having seen this, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm not sad that I saw it, but then I'm not happy either. I'm like, it was what it was. It was kind of, in a way, it was... I say it inoffensive, but in a way, it kind of is.
Yeah, there has been a fair bit of controversy that it's offensive in the fact that, you know, you've got these... you know, with everything that is going on in the world at the moment, you know, you've got these people in the Middle East, and you know, they're just seen as these kind of mindless kind of terrorists, these mindless thugs. But actually, they don't shy away from the question that who is the bad guy? You know, even though it is this big American dream man shooting and blowing crap up and end up winning the day and probably getting the American Badge of Honor or something. You know, even though it is all those things, it doesn't shy away from the fact that it does say, well, we actually dropped the bomb in the first place. You know, we were kind of responsible, and we kind of brought it on ourselves, as it were. While obviously that's not true either, it does try and question who is right, who is in the right, you know, who is good, who is evil. And while in the kind of, second half of the film, while obviously it's very clear that apparently the enemies are supposed to be this Middle Eastern family who are going around killing everybody that's important in the modern world, the fact is, it does answer those questions in the very beginning and towards the very end of the film. You know, who is good, who is bad?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, in that I kind of compare this to kind of... Cause there's been a spate of presidential thrillers, because this was released, like, 3 months before White House Down, which I kind of prefer.
Yeah.
Channing Tatum and Jamie Foxx have a better chemistry, really. And it reminds me a lot of one of my favourite ever guilty pleasure action, which is Air Force One. And it's... that's the thing, in that you do have these twists and you do have these turns and thinking, oh, it's also the hero here, who's the baddie, and all that sort of thing. But the other problem is that if you watch any modern spy film, they never play it straight anymore. So literally, there's always, you know, going into like a spy thriller or, you know, like a political thriller, that sort of thing. It's like, oh, there's going to be 3 or 4 twists and so-and-so's going to be good and so-and-so's going to turn out to be evil and all that sort of thing. And sometimes they can be done with kind of a lack of finesse. They can be done as, oh, yeah, I totally knew he was going to turn out to be the bad guy. I totally knew she was going to be a hero or a villain or whatever. I walked out the cinema thinking, oh, okay, I've seen it and all that sort of thing. But I just wasn't moved by it. I definitely didn't watch it again. And that's not, it's not a disservice to the people who made the film. But it's just a bit, it felt a bit unnecessary. So I don't know where they're going to go from here. It's like, what they're going to do next? Earth has fallen. Or, I don't know, Europe has fallen, or Christ knows what they'll do, because they're basically slowly escalating it. And I don't know if they're going to try and make this into like an anthology series or an actual kind of franchise where it's like, oh, okay, that sort of thing. But I don't know. I like the actors in it, Angela Bassett, who I have huge respect for. Yeah. I do love her. Unfortunately, she's not in the film a lot. So I was just like, oh, okay. All right, well, she's not going to be in it that a huge amount. Morgan Freeman's always good, although I can't help but feel that at this moment he's there just, like, phoning stuff in.
So
it's like when he was in... All right, so some films like Lucy, where he was in it for a good third of the film, you can tell he's there just on autopilot. He's there just like, yep, okay, be kind of kindly and a bit... mad and a professor and all that sort of thing. And it's a shame, really, because he's not really been given any like a vehicle, really. He is a fantastic actor. He's a very much beloved actor. And it would be great to see him do something that stretches his kind of acting muscles a bit, because all he does these days, he ends up in kind of genre films. So he was like in Downey Sini, and he's been in Lucy, and he's been in various films for like 20 minutes at a pop and all that sort of thing. And then doing some comedy like he did Last Vegas, which I saw and I was like, it's alright. I don't know about London's Fallen. It's the film that I've seen for this show that I'm completely not even ambivalent towards. I'm like, it's okay. And you know, like you said, it is kind of escapist a bit, because if you look at the news, it's not nice.
No.
In the world at the moment, by and large, I believe the world is largely a good place. But when you look at the news, you get so depressed. You're like, oh god, we're all dying and all that sort of thing. So films like Olympus Has Fallen and London Has Fallen, they are kind of escapist vehicles for people to kind of be like, yeah, well, there's always going to be some hero out there who kicks ass, and there's always going to be that sort of thing. So we take comfort in that. So people who go into it and they just have fun and they're like, yeah, that's fine. But I know people who will love them, and they're like, yeah, it's great, it's just a fun thriller, and I'm like, yeah, that's great, that's perfect.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna take it away from them, the fact that I just wouldn't watch this again. So
no, but I don't necessarily think that's the point. I think it is one of those films that you see once and you enjoy, and you go along for the ride, and that's fine. It's not going to be a Shawshank Redemption that you're going to watch several times in the future. It is what it is, and it's simple, it's escapist, and it does what it says on the tin. You know it's what's going to happen. London literally does fall. There's no surprises, and while obviously because modern audiences, I guess, are a little bit more switched on, they've kind of got to do those twists and turns, and they've got to make you question. I thought Colin Salmon was the baddie all the way through.
Yeah,
I was like, there's something not right about Colin Salmon. He's looking a bit fishy. But they've got to make you ask those questions and distrust what you see on screen, because with the exception of Mike Banning and the president, everybody else could easily be a bad guy.
You don't let them take me. If it comes to it, I want you to kill me. That's an order. London is just the first stop. Just imagine every major city descending into chaos. Your president dies tonight.
So London has fallen. As I said, if you want to go and escape, then you can go and see this. It is still in cinemas here in the UK. I know it was released early March in the US, but I'm sure it's still out and about in theatres as well.
Oh my God.
And that's all we've got time for in part one. We'll be back for part two in the next few days, so make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes. Check us out on Acast and follow us there. You can go to us on Twitter, obviously at Black Hole Cinema. We've also got a Facebook as well, to be updated when episode two, or part two rather, will be released. Thanks for joining me, Chris.
Oh, thanks for having me.
That's no problem. We'll be back for part two for reviews of High Rise, 10 Cloverfield Lane, The Witch, and obviously Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. Until next time, thank you for listening.
Getting slow in my old age, Alfred.
Even you got too old to die young. Not for lack of trying.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.